As oil continues leaking into Gulf Coast waters, political implications from the disaster are bubbling to the surface. Some in Washington want a reassessment of offshore oil drilling. Florida Senator Bill Nelson has called for a moratorium on new offshore oil exploration, while Representative Ed Markey of Massachusetts has called for congressional hearings to examine the spill, as well as energy policy and gas prices in general. But Lisa Marganelli of the New America Foundation's Energy Initiative argues that every gallon of gas is a gallon of risk. In an opinion piece in the New York Times, she writes that this spill is an opportunity to assess America's oil consumption. What lesson have you drawn from the Deepwater Horizon spill? Has the accident changed your mind about how we get or consume oil? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Lisa Marganelli is director of the New America Foundation's Energy Initiative and author of Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long, Strange Trip to Your Tank. You can find a link to her op-ed on our website at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Lisa Marganelli joins me now from Youth Radio in Oakland, California. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You write that on an emotional level, a moratorium on offshore drilling is a great idea. So what's wrong with it?
Well, I think we've had every time we have a major spill, we have a moratorium on drilling somewhere. The first moratorium was after the 1969 blowout and giant spill in Santa Barbara, which also was the foundation of Earth Day. So we had a moratorium on drilling off the East and West Coast then. And then we had another moratorium on drilling after the Exxon Valdez spill. And so we've effectively had moratoriums in place for 40 years. I think we need to move beyond the moratoriums. I mean, it's fine if we want to have some sort of moratorium. But the bigger underlying problem is that our gasoline consumption continues to rise. And that means if we're not drilling on our own lands with our own environmental laws and our own wonderfully litigious society ready to jump in and find and attack infractions, then we are basically importing oil from places, many of them third world countries, that don't have effective environmental laws in place or have governments that are not strong enough to enforce them. So, for example, since 1969, the Niger Delta area of Nigeria has had the equivalent of an Exxon Valdez worth of oil spilled on its lands and mangrove swamps every single year since 1969.
We have an email from David, and David expresses sentiment. Several of our emails do, saying, how do we reconcile our voracious appetite for cheap oil with the manifold costs of acquiring cheap oil? It's not necessary to make the long and distressing list of these costs, although this recent oil spill is but one example. Guaranteed to happen again because advanced technology cannot solve the problem of gluttony. The oil spill is so sad, but it shouldn't be surprising to any of us. And during all the finger wagging that will undoubtedly start, why don't we start to point at ourselves, maybe in the rearview mirror of our huge SUV or from the comfort of our couch in our houses heated to 72 degrees when it's 0 degrees outside, or even when we buy fresh produce in January that was trucked in from Mexico, or any number of luxury activities that originate with cheap oil?
Wow. Has that guy been reading my emails? That's wonderful. I'm glad you feel that way. And I suggest that you get right on the phone and call your elected representatives and say that what we need is a comprehensive way, some sort of comprehensive legislation addressing a plan to decrease our oil consumption. And we can do it in many ways. One is to obviously raise the CAFE standards. Another one is all the sorts of things that we did in the 70s with, changing the speed limit to 55 and retiming the stops, traffic lights. And there are lots of things that we can do to change traffic flow. But we can also do things like natural gas trucking and some alternative fuels. And we can also think about changing the way that we commute, for example, asking large employers to take more responsibility for how their workers get to work. A company like Walmart, for example, has 1.4 million employees. If they ran van pools to get them to work, it would remove a tremendous number of cars from the road and really ease the burden on their workers of maintaining oftentimes old cars and paying for the gasoline when prices are high. Anyway, there's a whole roster of things that we can do, and we need to really start attacking this. 40 years of moratoriums on drilling clearly have not accomplished much. Besides keeping the coastline clear for those of us in the U.S. Who don't live in the Gulf Coast. And I don't think that we have a right to ask other people to accept spills. One of the things that your caller mentioned was that in a certain sense, oil spills are predictable. It's true. Every oil spill is preventable, but oil spills are essentially inevitable. And the industry itself measures the rate of spill per ton mile shipped. There is at a certain point, simply transporting the stuff and using the stuff exposes you to spills. And clearly, after many years of relatively safe operation in the Gulf, whether it's through negligence or through some sort of freak accident, I mean, we still don't know what the cause of this thing is, but whatever it is, clearly there remain great risks.
Well, you trace these other spills and how they have had political implications with the current political environment in which this spill happened. That is, you know, an increased drumbeat to decrease our dependence on foreign oil, maybe more of a consensus building about the possibility of offshore oil drilling. You know, the drill here, drill now being a campaign slogan. And rising gas prices, I mean, prices that are hovering, you know, in some places close to $4 a gallon. What does all of that context lend to what do you think will come out of the political conversation around this spill?
Well, Americans' politics around oil are just rife with wishful thinking. And so what we tend to do is we tend to try to isolate the problem and say that we're solving some small part without addressing the larger issue, because our relationship to oil has really been an elephant in the room since the early 70s. In some senses, it actually dates back to the 30s. This has always been this sort of thing that we don't really want to touch the essential elements of, but we have to. And I think in this case, what I would love to see happen is for all of these different interested groups, the environmentalists, the home food, the sort of home produce group, all the sort of maybe a little bit survivalist types, all of the people who are interested in national security and people who are interested in cutting traffic jams, everyone basically to come together and push for this. I think this is sort of one of these catalytic moments when we could really address this problem.
Push for a conversation or push for specific policy initiatives?
I think push for a conversation that leads to specific policy initiatives and a real commitment to reducing our dependence on oil, really reducing oil consumption by 10, 15, 20% over the next 10 years, and then continuing to push on beyond that. We know we have to do it for climate change. We know we have to do it for economic and security reasons. And this is a really good time to push to actually do it.
We have a listener, Joseph in Minnesota, who suggests a policy of raising the gas tax to a guaranteed $4 minimum. What do you think the implications of that would be?
Well, I think that one group that has a really hard time with high gas prices is working families, is what we would call maybe the middle class or lower middle class, because oftentimes people are working three jobs and they have to commute between those jobs and they don't have access to great credit, so they can't buy the latest car. These are not people who drive Priuses. They're people who drive second or third hand SUVs with bad gas mileage. And those people really can't change where they live. They can't change where they commute to. They can't change the fact that they may be covering three jobs. And we're really going to be putting the screws to those people. And we would need to put in policies that would alleviate that for them or allow them to get access to credit to buy cleaner cars or something. I mean, you can't just say, oh, we're going to raise the gas price and that'll teach those people, those rich people in the SUVs, because that's actually not the problem at this point.
We have an email from Richard in Ann Arbor who says, in January, Cuba announced it would drill in the Strait of Florida. Mexico presumably drills off its Gulf Coast, which is at least as long as ours. Does anyone rationally believe that a moratorium on the part of the U.S. will deter any other players in the Gulf from drilling?
No.
That was a succinct answer.
Mexico had a terrible blowout in the 80s. Just a horrible, horrible accident in their coastal waters.
We are talking about the political implications of the oil spill and what sort of conversation around energy policy and oil use might result from this. My guest is Lisa Marganelli. She's director of the New America Foundation's Energy Initiative. She's also the author of Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long, Strange Trip in Your Tank. She's got an op-ed out, which you can read on our website, npr.org, if you click on Talk of the Nation. And you can join the conversation at 800-989-8255. And you can send us email, talk@npr.org, or join the conversation on the website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Let's hear from Ian in Honolulu. Ian, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hey, thanks. Love the show. Hey, I completely agree with all the sentiments have personally tried to make my life less oil-impacted and believe we need to reduce our consumption. But I wondered if
gasoline is expensive out there, isn't it?
Oh, it's really expensive. But you'd be surprised if you haven't been out here. People still drive giant SUVs and generally tend to not really – it's just accepted as a fact of life, which is why I'm a little concerned that except for those people in the directly affected areas of the Gulf Coast, that people around the nation and certainly in other places just won't really consider this a reason to change their consumption habits. So I was wondering if maybe one – and it slightly challenges the idea that we have strong environmental laws. I wonder if we really actually do have strong laws when it comes to the safety, environmental, Plan Bs and whatnot for offshore drilling. And if this might be an opportunity to push through something a little more rigorous, and if your expert has any idea of what those proposals should be, because I really don't think that we've made a lot of progress in that, given that we've had 8 years too of a Republican administration that really didn't feel that enforcing and making things safer and cleaner was necessarily a good idea.
Ian, thanks for your call. And Lisa, before you answer that question, let me just say you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Well, I think that we do need to reform drilling policy. One of the things that sticks out is, after the Exxon Valdez, we reformed oil shipping with an act called the Oil Pollution Act of 1990 that really dramatically reduced spills. But part of the way it did that was by making the liability for a spill infinite. And that means that if you're going to ship, just 1 million gallons of gasoline or something, you need to have $1 billion worth of liability insurance, which means that you've got basically insurance agents breathing down your neck about your safety practices all the time. It's kind of an extra lever on you. And what's one of the weird things that's come out of this spill is that the rig itself only had $500 million worth of insurance on it. And you have to wonder if the rig had had $5 billion worth of insurance, given the damage it's capable of causing, if there would have been a different setup for the blowout protector. So that's kind of the private sector solution to the, regulation. But the Minerals Management Service is a notoriously troubled agency. The General Accounting Office issued a whole bunch of very interesting reports about them in 2008, including the observation that we do not get enough money for our offshore oil in those leases, partly through some complex exchanges that the Minerals Management Service is okay with, but partly because we simply don't charge them enough and we might be missing out on $100 to $400 billion worth of extra payments, which is really appalling. The next issue with the Minerals Management Service is that they're extremely close to the agency to the industry that they regulate. And there was another scandal in 2008 in which they were found to be doing drugs and accepting gifts and actually having sex with members of the oil industry, which is, it's hard to even describe how absurd that is for a regulatory agency that oversees both safety and finance. Obviously, this is an agency that needs some kind of reform. And of course, there are things that we can do to make drilling safer. But the question is, there's always going to be the sort of black swan 1 in 10 million events. I mean, we still don't know what caused this spill. Was it an accident that was a one in a gazillion? Or is this some sort of cascade of negligence that could have been foreseen? We don't know. Or some mixture.
Let's hear from Susan in East Windsor, New Jersey. Susan, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. I agree we need a conversation about our oil usage, but we haven't had a conversation about any national policy in a long time. It's talking points versus talking points. And until that culture's changed, I'm not sure what we can do other than individual efforts, which, we take public transportation when we can, which is very frustrating, even in the Northeast, and we own a Prius, and our other car is a fuel-efficient car also, but, you know, individually, I'm from Louisiana. This breaks my heart. I used to fish in the waters there with my dad. But
Susan, I'm afraid your line is breaking up, so I'm going to let you go and ask Lisa Marganelli to answer the question about how do you get a conversation started?
Well, I think this is the beginning of the conversation. You see people starting to break out of the old mold of just calling for a moratorium of people yelling moratorium versus drill, baby, drill, which was a simply absurd argument. We do tend to reduce this to cartoons, and in fact, you know, oil is just so complex and it's so embedded in our lives, in ourselves, in our, you know, many of our parents got together in the backs of cars. I mean, we are the people of oil more than we have any idea. And we need to really start talking about that in new ways and kind of breaking out of the old patterns of environmentalist versus business or oil industry versus regulators. And we need to work at this in a much more systematic way. At the same time, I think that there's a real case to be made for getting on the phone to your legislature and saying, I want some sort of comprehensive petroleum reform. I think that we have a history sometimes of throwing together some pretty decent regulation out of the crisis, and it helps shape going forward in the future. The OPA 90 Act that I mentioned before was essentially, you know, it was done fairly quickly. It was done out of necessity, and it has really dramatically reduced transportation spills.
Lisa Marganelli is director of the New America Foundation's Energy Initiative and author of Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long Strange Trip to Your Tank. She joined us from the studios of Youth Radio in Oakland, California. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can read her op-ed, which appeared in the New York Times, on our website, npr.org, and click on Talk of the Nation. Tomorrow, Wide Awake, a memoir of insomnia. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington.